Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1132. It's the 2nd of August, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Neil Rickett, CEO of Vesarion, VRS. And Neil discusses today's collaboration with a prominent global sports and fashion goods manufacturer to incorporate their Nanning Fuel-Air Graphene Nanoplatelets into their products. Also on the podcast, David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack All, talks about North Lincolnshire Council's Planning Committee refusal to extend the existing planning permission at Wrestl, in which they hold a 27.5% interest. Also on the podcast, Aidan Bishop, Chairman of Big Dish, DISS, which listed today on the main market, and it's a brand new way of offering dining deals and discounts through its online reservation yield management platform. Aidan explains all that and how it works in a bit. Also, it's John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about lithium and Codal Minerals and ARC Minerals. That's COD for Codal Minerals, K-O-D, and A-R-C-M for ARC Minerals. Plus, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now, Neil Rickett, CEO of Vesarion. It's VRS ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. It's always a pleasure to speak to you.
And it's one of those rare times where you were on holidays, but you're still working. I said, Ray, for you to be on holiday, because you're still working, you're always working, but you are on holidays. But so it's, thanks for coming on. But
No problem.
I suppose you're having withdrawal, are you? Because you work so much. Do you find that? Do you find it hard to relax? Because you're just constantly on the go, constantly doing it. When you're supposed to relax, do you find it hard to switch off?
The answer to that is we don't switch off. That's the problem. And even though I'm away for a couple of days, just trying to chill out before we have the next big push, it's difficult because your mind's still going. You're still getting lots of phone calls. You're still getting lots of texts. You're still getting lots of emails. And you can't really leave it alone. So anybody who says that they can, I don't believe they're telling the truth. But we've got a great team around us now. We've obviously got Matt Walker, and who's joined us from HM Government, and we've got David. But the problem is, the more people you take on, the busier you get. So it's a nice problem to have. There's no way that I'm complaining at all. I love my job, and I love what we're doing at the moment, and thoroughly enjoying it. So
yeah, I suppose one of the hard bits about having a business that's growing like that is you have to learn, and I've never been good at this myself, but to delegate, you know, and if you've come from a very small outfit like you have, like two men in a garage, it's very hard to do that, isn't it?
No, luckily I had a background in running bigger businesses, so, you know, we're quite comfortable at the moment. The most number of staff I've had is about 750 working for me, and we've only got about just over 100 now, so got a bit of time to go before I reach my my previous all-time high for a number of people working for me, but got some really, really good people working in the team now, and we announced a few weeks ago that Steve Hodger joined us from Cambridge, and he's having a massive impact on what we're doing as well. It's all really, really good news.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I always like to do this because if someone has tuned in for the first time and has not heard of the company, they probably don't know what we're talking about. But so for them, Neil, can you give them a quick summary as to what Vesarion is all about, please?
Yeah, so Vocerium was started in 2011 with the aim of taking IP from UK universities in material science, turning it into products. And our biggest achievement so far to date is buying a spin-out from the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge that focuses on graphene. And so that's most of my work now.
Yeah, okay. And just look through the list of RNS's the collaborations and agreements that Vocerium has done, and it's very impressive. Like I said, at one point, almost every week, in fact, twice a week sometimes, of announcements. And today you've got another one. It's a sporting goods collaboration. And I looked at this and thought, hang on, have I got deja vu here? Because you've sort of done one of these, but obviously there's lots of big sporting companies. So this is another biggie, is it? A big company?
This is a massive company. It's a real coup for the company. And the difference between this one and the last one was we were dealing with this big company's supplier. This one is direct with the company, big global company, really wanting to see the benefits of graphene in their products, really wanting that competitive advantage, which is why we can't name them, and wanting to really get on with it. So, you know, we always like to have a balance in the business between short-term, you know, companies that want to achieve something really quickly, and then the longer term automotive and aerospace companies. And there's no better market to be in than sporting goods. So, yeah, they want the advantages and they can make a big difference. That's one of the reasons why we did that demonstrator with Don Parsons, who won that bronze medal in the Winter Olympics. It enables us to demonstrate our products out there.
Yeah, and so this company, whenever you do these companies, obviously there's NDAs and all that stuff, and so you can't actually name the name, but you said this product will be used in moisture barriers. Is also the company's partners global presence within sponsorship of British, European and international top flight professional football clubs. It's always a guessing game. I always want to know who they are. You know? So it's, but that's when you final results come out, right? People sort of traditional sort of people who value companies look at revenue and profit and all that. And I've often argued, I said, you know, you can't value this company traditionally because it's not a traditional company. It's a brand new, you know, material. It's a brand new sector they're creating. We don't know the upward potential of this as yet. And someone says, yes, but they didn't sell a lot of graphene. And I said, well, that's not the point. At the moment, it's brand new graphene, you know, it's brand new. People are testing it, they don't know what it can do for them, so that's what's happening. So what stage are you, Nick? Because obviously these collaborations are for these people who want to get a cutting edge in their sector, in their field, and they're testing your product. So how long? I mean, you know, this company, for example, would you have any idea how long they'd be testing?
We don't know with this particular company. All we know is that their intent is to get moving quickly. They're pushing us quite hard. It's taking quite a lot to get through the negotiation stage. It's a big company, big legal team. They want to protect their position quite heavily. You know, in an ideal world, they'd like an exclusivity, which we're not prepared to give them because we're already working in this sector. And obviously, from our point of view, we want them to get the Nanny name out there. And so, you know, that's always part of the whole conversation and the negotiation and so on. Now we're at the stage where actually they said, yeah, right, let's get the product. Let's get it into our research teams. Let's get some indicative results out there, and then we can really push ahead. But every time we take on a collaboration, it's a big piece of work for our team. And so we have to be relatively selective about what we take on. We're not just doing anything that comes in through the door. We're in a position now where they have to meet certain criteria. And we can put the real focus on it, you know, with the guys at Manchester and Cambridge, you know, and that's why we signed up for a place at the Graphene Engineering Innovation Centre up there, so our lab could be close to the action, it can be close to the academics, and we can continue to strengthen the links with all the great people that are in this sector. But it is a new science, and you know, we don't know what some of the effects are, and sometimes you get benefits that you never even anticipated. But what we do know now is that we're starting to get first mover advantage. We're starting to get all of these big companies coming to us and, you know, asking us about our materials and how they can work with us, which, when you think this company is only a few years old, is a great position to be in. You know, we only started dabbling in graphene in 2014 when we bought 2DTEC, and it took us a while to get to understand how we were going to use it. Mm-hmm. And now we've got these big companies from all around the world. You know, these are, you know, people you know, you see their products day to day. You know, everywhere you go, you see them. I'm on holiday at the moment. Everyone's wearing this product, you know, and you kind of sat there thinking, I can't believe that these guys want to talk to us. And for me, that's, as you know, as the largest shareholder, that is a massive tick in the box for verification and validation and due diligence that these companies want to do this work.
Yeah, yeah. And all these previous sort of agreements and collaborations, obviously they're in testing as well. Are you constantly in contact with these people, sort of talking about them and looking at the results and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of tailoring going on. There's a lot of making sure. So making the graphene, we now consider pretty much sort of routine day-to-day stuff. Mm-hmm. Actually getting that graphene into these guys' products is where the real challenge is. You know, making sure that the graphene is dispersed, making sure that it's the right specification, improving our specifications all the time. And that's, again, we announced a few weeks ago that we'd brought on board the chairman of the ISO panel. We've got our own BSI guy. Yeah, we know what the standards are going to be, and we're influencing them to a certain extent in the connections and the contacts we've got. Then, if you look at replicating what we're doing in the UK over in the US, which is going to be my next big challenge, all those players are all there, you know, and it's a big market to go at. And, you know, although the market is in the US, what we do know is that the manufacturer is in China. And that's why we've got this kind of three-strand process going on. Secure the manufacturing in China, get the best deal we can, protect the IP, make sure that we're not just beaten up and give the stuff away. Look for the biggest markets, which is Europe and the US and China, and then service those as best we can. It's a really, really exciting time, Justin. You know, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Neil, as always, if someone is now listening and likes the sound of the story but are not following you on Vox Markets, then give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
So the first reason is that we are in one of the most exciting sectors currently out there. Advanced materials are making happen some of the things that we really need, like electric vehicles and better mobiles and stuff like that. And so we're in the right place to be able to influence that. The second reason is that we've been able to demonstrate through 14 or more collaborations, news on a constant basis, that we're starting to become the place to come to for these large companies who want to satisfy that need that they've got. And the third thing is that I hold the largest holding, and that my agenda and my strategy is aligned with that of our long-term holders.
Excellent stuff. And Neil, I know you're in Europe holidaying, and on the reports of the news over here, it's saying that some places hitting 47 degrees. So I assume it's quite warm there, is it?
Yeah, it is quite warm. It's I think I've actually run away to get cooler, but it's lovely. So just enjoy a bit of downtime.
Yeah, have a nice time, and hopefully speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramall, Executive Chairman of Union Jack All. UJO is the ticker. David, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for asking me. That's very kind of you. Thank you.
Now, we wanted you to come on, obviously, a chat about that wrestle planning extension that was discussed and news released on yesterday. And we'll get into that in a bit. Very important news. Before we do, David, if someone's listening for the first time, they've not heard of the company, how would you summarise Union Jack All to them, please?
Union Jack is quoted, listed on AIM. Union Markets, everyone knows. And our modus operandi is to take interest in stakes in late-stage developments, drill wells, find oil, which we've been successful in doing at Wrestle, even though we're still battling to get this into production. You know, we've got a discovery, and this is what we do.
Yeah, okay. Well, how many interests do you have? How many investments do you have in these? How many prospects do you have, David?
We've 11 interests in licenses.
Okay, and one of those, of course, is Wrestle, quite a large interest in that. What's the percentage in that, David?
27.5%. Okay. Very important to us, as I think I've mentioned on your interviews before, that, you know, when this comes into production, company changing, $4 million a year for us, not to be sneezed at, which is why the decision yesterday, okay, we might have lost the battle, or Aiton lost the battle being the operator. It percolates down to us and the partners. It doesn't mean to say the war's lost, far from it.
Okay,
and anyone that knows.
Yeah. You know, announced yesterday the wrestle planning extension has been refused, of course, by the council in Lincolnshire. So, So on what basis and is this refusing? And what's next, David?
Right, on the basis is... The answer to that, without trying to sound illiterate, is I don't know what basis. I suppose you could say not in my backyard. The strange thing, I'm going to have a moan about the process. Of course I am, because the council has a planning officer, and that planning officer does all the preamble, the work before it goes in front of the committee. He checks up whether or not there's safety issues, health and safety, environment. He's the one that really takes it on the chin, and he recommended, as he's done three other times before, recommended that the project be approved. Mm-hmm. The objectors come along and they say, we don't want any fracking going on. Well, this isn't fracking. It is absolutely conventional oil and gas, although the objectors, and they're quite entitled, they disagree, but it's not true. It is not fracking. Issues on prop and squeeze, which is a normal industry process. It uses fluoric acid, one of the two. And what the amount of acid is what you'd stick in your hot tub if you've got one, or a swimming pool in the local baths, or clean windows, clean buildings. And basically say that this has never been used in Wrestle, or effectively onshore UK, and they're being used as guinea pigs. Absolutely not correct. And it's just a terrible shame that misinformation, fake news, can be put into these meetings. Maybe could be refuted. That's the process, and I don't blame anybody for that. That's what happens. And the council, the committee are there, and it's quite disturbing to hear some of the things that come mentioned there, saying we don't want this in our area. Egdon will make money from this. Well, not just Egdon, everyone will. But that's the whole reason to have a business. We pay our licence fees and our tax, corporation tax, business rates. So, yeah, of course Egdon will make money over this and the partners. And one of the councillors stated that he didn't see the need for a planning officer, that this decision should be left entirely to the committee. And in the next breath, he says, I voted against this last time because I didn't understand it.
Exactly. He's just contradicted his own statement. So that's the whole point. What's the point in having a professional planning officer getting their advice? Him saying it's good to go. He's happy with it, and then it comes to committee, and they turn his advice down. Him saying then that one of the guys from the committee saying they don't understand it. That's why the planning officer is there. And I don't understand. They can't just run a committee, by heart, by emotion. They have to take expert advice and understand that, yes, it's a business. Do they not want to employ people? Do they not want people paying their mortgages, going to the shops, boosting the economy? It just seems insane to me, David. So what's next then? Where do you go from here?
Well, just to follow on from what you're saying, it's a little bit like a judge hearing a trial and saying, well, I actually don't understand this trial, but I'm going to find you guilty anyway. And I mentioned to somebody else this morning, thank God this wasn't back in the 15th century in a witch trial, because I won't be talking to sheriffs, we'd be dangling from the end of a rope. And slight jokey way, but unfortunately, Justin, this is the process. This is how it happens. This is real life. This is how it works. And you ask me what we do next. This is up to Egdon. Like, we're going to lobby. I know Egdon will do the right thing. They're professional enough. Of course they are. And we support them in everything they do. But I tend, if you want to ask me personally, what next? Has to go to central government. You just cannot keep going up. It's a long way from Devon to Scunthorpe. Again, a bit tongue-in-cheek, I go to the other end of the world to make this work. But yeah. something needs to be done to accelerate this. Because they're obviously poles and poles apart. The fossil fuel doubters, dislikers, and they're people that are for it. And how we work together God knows. And I'm not going to knock protesters or objectors. Everyone's got their opinion. But this is not working.
Yeah.
And it has to. Am I still confident? Of course I am. And another question, I guess you're going to say, well, what now? Well, I've got plan A, B, C and D. So if shareholders think, oh my God, what's going to happen? I'm pleased to be able to speak this morning and say, look, we've got plans. You know, there are contingency plans, believe me. And Union Jack will be as strong as ever.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Your analogy there about a court and a judge is true. It's like having a court case about something that's gone on medically, and the judge getting a sort of doctor in to give the expert advice, and the judge not taking any advice from the doctor whatsoever. It's like it's a farce. It really is. And I just think they're slightly backward. I mean, I think. But isn't the higher authorities of the land are more now pro oil and gas, especially because of Brexit? So if it gets taken to a higher court, surely they'll go in your favour.
I don't know. Strange things happen. I'm you know, the odds are yes. You know, as long as everything's being done right, which again I'm 100% confident that it is. But going back to your judge analogy, it's almost like asking. No, do I blame the committee? No, I don't. I blame the process. I'm sure they're all very, very nice people. One guy in particular spoke a lot of sense. I'm not going to name him, but he knows he is. He was very, very good, in my opinion. But it's almost like asking these guys to comment on a brain operation. Mm. Saying, well, should this lady man have a brain op? And they say, well... You know, they're not qualified in a lot of areas. They are in some, and they're not fools. There was a lot of emotion there yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and it's very sad to see a process like that sort of turn into a mockery.
Yeah.
But I certainly wouldn't be blaming the council. You know, that's the way it works. And they did their job. That's what they're there to do, I suppose.
Yeah, but I don't think they're ruling on data and evidence and fact. I think they're ruling on emotion rather than, lack of fact, complete emotion. It's just, like I said, not in my backyard. What they don't understand is that it will offer employment to people, you know, and it'll help the economy. You know, that's what they're not seeing.
Well, of course it will. Like, this is turning into a bit of a debate rather than, but I agree, and I'm quite happy to sort of get myself involved in that. It's just a terrible shame, and there's a lot of emotion. Like one of the objectors said, oh, the gentleman down the road from Wrestle has had a heart attack. Not that I'm saying that the oil well caused a heart attack, but it may well have helped it. That's never right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. You know, surely somebody would say, well, look, we don't really see that it's been part of the free world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well,
at least you could say, yeah. And I'm not going to knock. That's what they do. And I'm not to say they're wrong or right. You know, that's a fair play to them having thoughts and feelings. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you know what? Egdon said they are going to look at the committee's full response and the receipt of the committee's decision, and they make a reply and to deal with it there. So
I've had loads of emails saying, right, what now? Like, you know, you've got to sit down for a couple of days. You've got to take advice from legal advisors and everyone else associated, plus the partners. So it's not a decision that's going to be made in a day. There'd be lots of consultation, and then shareholders would be told.
Yeah.
But so, life goes on, and we've got a bag of more projects, and we continue to look for even bigger and better projects. So, you know, we're still around, alive and kicking, and anyone that knows me will know that I don't give up.
Yeah.
I'm not a quitter. This is going to be seen right out to the end, I assure everybody.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like I said, you are right. I mean, you know, Union Jack Oil is not Wrestle. It's, you know, it's not the be all and end all. It is an important project to you, of course. It may be a bit more delayed now. But like I say, you've got so much more going on. So, and in fact, David, to end on a positive note, for someone listening right now, in fact, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
I think you've nailed the first one by saying that it's not all about Wrestle. Like, there'd be news, I'm not saying all of it would be good news, as yesterday demonstrated quite equivocally. However, we've got lots of projects, lots of news flow expected during the next year and beyond. I'd like to say that the directors are transparent. I'm on, you know, I'm licking wounds, of course I am, but I'm quite happy to be in front of you guys speaking today, let shareholders know what's going on, life as usual, business as usual. And the next thing I say, we try and do what we say we're going to do. Lots of transparency in this company and lots of will to make it a success.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. David, thanks for taking the time to come on and chat to us about it. You know, it's much appreciated. I know some companies, and it's not good news, they tend to run and hide. And you never do that, which is very good. Good or bad, you're always willing to come on. And like I say, that fits in with your transparency there, because you're always prepared to come on and tell it how it is. So thanks for that, David.
Not at all. But if I can interrupt, what mustn't be forgotten, a lot of shareholders have put hard money into this company, mm-hmm. and they expect us to do the best, and that's what I intend to do. It's not always going to be good news, but sometimes it will be. And on balance, we'll make it. But there's people's funds invested in this company, like I always say.
Yeah.
This is back of cigarette stuff, back of cigarette packet stuff for risk. However, we like to think we can mitigate these risks. But this is shareholders' money. If nobody sticks up for them, if I won't, then nobody will they? So there you go.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of shareholders are invested in you, pretty much, David, you know, and the team there. So that's that kind of attitude shows why. But, David, thanks for coming on, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Marvellous, Justin. Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Aidan Bishop, chairman of Big Dish. And the ticker there is Dish. Good ticker. Aidan, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
And I've got to say congratulations. It's your first day of listing on the main market. So it must be quite an exciting day for you, yeah?
It is indeed. It is indeed. Very exciting day for us.
How long has this been? I mean, for people not aware, when you're thinking of taking a company, you know, private or public, I mean, how long does that process take?
Well, in our case, it took an extremely long time for lots of different reasons, actually. I mean, we've been, it was quite a torturous regulatory process, I would have to say. That would be the best way to describe it. And we sort of had quite a few false starts, actually. We thought we were about to get the approval many months ago, and then we didn't, and then we crossed an accounting date and so forth. So it was a very, very long and drawn out process, and that makes it all the more better today for our investors.
Yeah, well, I don't
think we got over the line.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think, you know, relive the pain of that for you. So let's go look at the positive side. So Big Dish, Dish is a ticker. What's it all about? What's the business then, Aidan?
We are a yield management platform. So yield management is all around dynamic pricing. It's basically charging different prices at different times for the same product. And American Airlines introduced yield management in the 1970s, and it transformed the airline industry so that airline seats were sold at different prices based upon supply and demand. And the hotel industry quickly followed suit, and we're doing that in the restaurant industry. So basically, in any restaurant, you're going to find there are quieter periods. It could be like, you know, traditionally in many restaurants, Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday nights are not going to be as busy as a Friday night. So what we do is we allow restaurants to effectively shape their traffic. So yield management works whenever there are fixed overheads and a perishable resource. So in the case of restaurants, you've got rent, you've got staff to pay, you've got utilities, and your perishable resource is effectively your tables. So empty tables don't make money. So what yield management seeks to do is optimize revenue in a smart way. And that's what we're looking to do. So we are looking to drive traffic to restaurants during the quieter periods that they have, which they can determine. And the driver behind yield management is incentive. So, you know, basically, why would somebody take a red-eye flight as opposed to a flight in the daytime, for example? Many times it's due to a cost benefit. And so that's what yield management seeks to change behavior through incentive.
Yeah, that makes it complete sense, especially in the restaurant business, because, I mean, everyone tends to go at the same time. But, of course, if I could get, like, 20% cheaper or 25% cheaper to go at a different time, I probably would change my habit of going out in the same time. So how does it work?
It's an interesting point, though, because that's exactly what we've seen happen. So we have seen that in one of our Asian cities that 9 p.m. is our most popular time slot and our second most popular is 4:30 p.m. So we are seeing people dine at different times because they're able to get a cost benefit. And it's really, really simple for consumers. So within three taps, somebody can make a booking. And we give the restaurants an app as well, and they can see the reservations that are coming in. And the reservations are instantly confirmed. So it's a really simple user experience.
Yeah. And would restaurants then charge a premium for certain busy times, or what's the score there?
We haven't done like a surge pricing, like a Uber style. We haven't done that. So we've just sort of focused on the quieter periods rather than their busy periods.
Yeah, yeah. And so how does it work? Do people go onto your website, onto an app? What happens?
They can, but predominantly everything happens through the app. So there's an app. There's a free consumer app, and they can download it and they can make bookings. At the moment that we are available in three Asian cities: Manila, Hong Kong, and Jakarta. Today, as part of the admission, we've acquired a company in the UK, so we are coming into the UK as well.
Okay, and when you come into the UK, obviously you'd get you'd sign up to certain companies, or what happens there, and certain restaurants or certain chains, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, we've got chains on our platform, we've got independents, we've got a whole different range of restaurants, predominantly in the casual dining and fine dining space. We don't really look at fast food type of restaurants, because, you know, the price points aren't really conducive. But so we have a business development teams, and they approach restaurants, chain restaurants, independent restaurants, and they sign them up to the app, and the restaurants pay a small fee per head per diner seated.
Yeah, and so what's, I mean, you know, I like this concept, because of course we've seen the app and in the space like Just Eat, they've done phenomenally well, just being the sort of the person that brings all these companies together at the aggregator kind of thing. But so what stops a restaurant doing this on their own rather than coming to you then?
Well, I mean, we're a platform, so I mean, nothing to stop a restaurant doing it on their own, but they're unlikely to have the same type of reach where on a single platform where you've got hundreds of restaurants, there's more choices for consumers.
Yeah, and so as yet, you are a working business. Yeah, so how long has the business, as we know it, in this guise, been going then?
Well, we started life under as a restaurant discount card, similar to like Taste Card in the UK, mm-hmm. and we made the decision to pivot towards yield management in mid-2016, and we started building a whole suite of products from there that took quite a long time for us to develop. And I think the inspiration behind it was really, I saw a company in New York, and it was a yield management platform some years ago, and they were acquired by Groupon and subsequently shut down. And so we started looking more at this yield management, and we found it very interesting, and we found it a lot better and a lot more smarter way than the old-fashioned type of, you know, coupons and vouchers and discount cards.
Yeah, cool. Excellent stuff. And so you say, you know, you're in three cities. So where are you based again? You say you come into the UK,
At the moment, we're in Manila, Hong Kong, and Jakarta. We've acquired a company in the UK called Table Pouncer that will be rebranded to Big Dish. That operates in Bournemouth predominantly. And Bournemouth is quite interesting. Bournemouth has a population of about 200,000 people. And at times, there's 10,000 people a month being seated by Table Pouncer. So we're quite excited about the UK, and we think there's a big opportunity to expand around the UK, around small towns and cities where there's no real competition, and then come to London at a later point.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent stuff. Well, Aidan, well done on the first day. Well done getting it listed, finally. Like you said, it was a bit of a hurdle. But for people listening who like the sound of this, but obviously not following you because you're brand new, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, food tech is a really hot sector at the moment. There's some really interesting and big tech giants that are investing in young companies in the space. So I think that the reason to follow us is really all about the growth that we're going to achieve. And it's all about growth, basically.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Good to chat to you, Aidan, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, I'm very good. Thank you. Just back from travelling in Africa, looking at mines and driving around talking to geologists and other types in Zimbabwe and Zambia.
Wow. Well, do you know what? I've just come, not as exotic as you, I just come back from a week in Turkey in a hotel. but that's why we sort of missed each other. But okay, cool. So what have you been looking at? I mean, I noticed we've often mentioned codal minerals, and I just noticed heightened volume and double-digit percentage increase. Of course, they're in the lithium space. But so on your travels, have you been looking at any lithium or anything like that, or what's happening?
Yes, I went to see a new lithium mining project in Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. It was historically a lithium mine being mined by the Germans for lithium for optical usage. And that project is full speed ahead, lots of demand for the lithium. And in fact, very little of the core left in the core boxes. It looks like the Chinese have had as much as they can get their hands on. And it looks like demand for lithium is still running some way ahead of availability of supply. So that's very good news.
Yeah. It's odd sometimes you see this kind of volume in a stock like Kodal, which is lithium. And, you know, we've been talking about it for a while. But all of a sudden, one day, on no news, just goes crazy. You know, and you think, what's going on here? Does someone know something we don't? But you're the man to ask. I mean, any news coming out? John?
Well, it's always possible. I'm not aware of any news that's about to come out, but the drilling results have been very good. Yeah. We know the Chinese are very, very keen for the company to actually get going and start delivering even raw ore to by truck to the nearest available port, and so they can get it on a boat to China. Again, that suggests to us that the Chinese are very short of material and desperate to get their hands on anything they can, almost at any cost. So it wouldn't surprise me if there was a bit more happening there. And I think really, you know, that's an easy project to get going. So in an ideal world, they'll build a concentrator and upgrade the lithium so the trucking costs would be less. And I hope they do follow the sort of right and proper path to do that. But the Chinese certainly seem very, very keen to get their hands on any decent grade lithium material that they can.
Yeah, so demand is there. Maybe, I mean, obviously, China is the biggest adopter now of the EV sort of tech, and maybe demand is picking up faster than people think, you know, because you always have these forecasts, and they're obviously, it's hard to predict, and so they're never quite accurate, but it does seem now that, you know, with all the governments in the world, you know, who are anti-diesel petrol, then maybe the pressure is on, and maybe people are adopting it faster than we think, you know?
Well, the pressure's definitely on, driven by new regulations coming in by the policymakers, and 2030 seems to be the big crunch date for banning combustion engines, and certainly insisting on either pure electric vehicles or at least hybrid vehicles, which I think the UK government is softening its stance on. But in the meantime, certainly there's got to be an awful lot of work done on building new battery plants and supplying the commodities for those. And let's not forget the infrastructure that needs to go with all of that, the copper and the cobalt and everything else that is required.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so commodities, hot commodities to look at if you're not exposed to them, I suppose, the copper, cobalt, you know, lithium, nickel. What else is there really in there? Is that pretty much it?
Well, those are the key commodities, I think. I mean, there are more exotics. You can look at the rare earths, and we're looking very closely at a company called Makango, which has a good quality rare earth project in Malawi. And there aren't many of these things around. You know, there aren't many projects that are at a sensible stage of advancement and study. And it can, you know, it can take 5, 10, 15 years for one of these projects to get off the ground. So companies like Makango have a distinct advantage, and they've also managed to grab the higher grade and better quality deposits. So this is important.
Yeah. Okay, all right. And as far as, you know, company stocks, you know, specific company with news out, what's happening, John?
Well, one of the key companies I went to see in Zambia, and it was right at the end of the copper belt, was Arc Minerals. And they've got a project that they recently consolidated under their umbrella called Zamsort. And that's an amazing looking project. The drill results, we don't have the results of the assays yet, but the drill cores that I saw coming out of the ground certainly had significant amounts of bornite and chalcocite, chalcopyrite mineralization, and that looks really good. So what I can say is that there are at least two drill holes showing mineralization 440 meters apart. There is an open pit there. There's a large stockpile of about 10,000 tons of copper cobalt mineralization. I brought back a few samples that look very interesting. And what we don't know yet is just what the eventual scale of this project is going to be, and what the grade of it is going to be properly. What we do know is there is something there. It looks like it's economic, and they have a processing plant that is about two thirds constructed now. So we expect them to start production by the end of the year, and at a reasonable, a modest but reasonable scale. And there's a lot of improvement that I think can be done there. So I think that looks like something. And the important thing about the development of cash flow is it should restrict and limit any further dilution going forward. So that's always something to bear in mind from an investor perspective.
Marvellous stuff. Okay. And are you around next week, John, or are you travelling to exotic climes again?
I've done enough travelling for now. 10 mines and projects in 10 days in Zimbabwe and Zambia. That's enough for now.
Yeah. Well, when you go to these places, though, when people show you around, what do you look at? Everything. What do you do? Take notes. What's the score? What happens there?
We take notes, photos, talk to all the local guys, try and gain as much local knowledge as possible. Find out what's good and what's not so good about these projects, what the community thinks of things, what the local guys are like, what the permitting situation is. Of course, the basics, the grade, the mineralogy, the metallurgy. There's a lot of different things to understand, most of which is box ticking and just checking what's there is really there. But then there are always the intangibles, really the community issues. Often communities are very happy to have the mines, have the jobs and all of that. But one's got to take good care of the tailings issues. What are you going to do with the waste rock? What happens to the project at the end of its life? What are the community issues around it? Are there going to be local objections? So there's quite a lot to try and understand. And it does help if you can talk to some local people and listen to what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. John, thanks for that, brother, and we'll catch up next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Botswana Diamonds, BOD, BOD. Of course, I had James on the podcast yesterday. At four, MX Oil. MXO hasn't been there for a while. At three, Landor Resources, LND, I should say. At two, 7Digital, 7DIG. And number one, most followed company, again, it's the second day, I think, Rehobold Resources, RBD is the ticker there. Okay, time for top five most liked RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Iron Ridge Resources, Exploration Update, Ghana Lithium Portfolio. At four, United Oil and Gas, issue of share options. At three, Hurricane Energy, HUR, operational update. At two, Visarian, Neil's on the podcast earlier on, goods or sporting goods collaboration. And number one, most liked RNS, came from Anglo-African Oil and Gas, rig update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com. You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
You can't make the most of your data if it's stuck in different silos. If it's scattered across the cloud, on-prem, and with your apps, then it's hard to access, hard to work with, and increasingly expensive. Now you can see it all and manage it all from one place. Welcome to Data Done Right. You can start managing your data, not your infrastructure. It's unified, simple, secure, and it's only with a Pure Storage platform. Get started at purestorage.com.